There was a landmark ruling in our High Court today. It's ruled a man be legally recognised as the father of a girl conceived by artificial insemination with his sperm due to his active involvement in her life. He'd been in a legal battle to prevent the biological mother and her wife from moving overseas with the child. Last year, the full court of the family court agreed with the women that he was not a legal parent, but that's been overturned today. In a moment, we'll be joined by Talia Blyer, who is the lawyer behind this case. And the man cannot be identified for legal reasons, of course. We can't speak with the man, but we can speak with the lawyer that's been pursuing this case. Talia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a long, drawn-out case. What's your client saying about today's ruling?
I think, well, initially he was speechless, understandably so. You know, it's been going on for so long, but ultimately he's just so glad that the law now recognises what he and his daughter's reality is and has always been for you know, since she was born.
So the High Court overturned the family court decision from last year. What was the winning argument? What was the case?
The argument in the High Court really had to do with the interplay of state and federal law. So it boiled down to some pretty complex constitutional arguments. But ultimately, what we argued, which was successful, was that for all intents and purposes, our client is the parent of his daughter in every sense of the word, biologically, socially, psychologically, and that therefore, the law should recognise him as such. The means in which his daughter was conceived, which was by artificial insemination, shouldn't be determinative of his status as a parent when he's been a parent in every other sense of the word.
What ramifications do you expect that this case will have on others in maybe similar situations?
I think it's giving a lot of families clarity, modern families clarity about the roles of everyone involved in children's lives. So there are so many families out there where mum and dad are not in a romantic relationship, not because they've separated, but simply because maybe they've just wanted to co-parent a child and they've had a child through IVF. But previously there was uncertainty about whether dad could be recognised as dad because the law perhaps suggested, or it did suggest, that that dad was a sperm donor because of the way the child was conceived. So there'll be some beautiful certainty now for those families about a dad status as a dad. I think that we need to make sure that the case isn't misconstrued to suggest that every single donor is classified as a legal parent, because of course that has ramifications for child support and all sorts of other responsibilities that come with parenthood. But this case hasn't found that. This is where there's a clear intention to co-parent, and the dad has played an active role in his child's life, and that means he's recognised dad, not simply because he donated sperm.
Talia, thank you for joining us. Talia Blyer is a lawyer for the man who's today won his High Court battle to be recognised as the legal parent of a child he fathered through sperm donation. Dr Fiona Kelly is a law professor at La Trobe University and an expert when it comes to the laws surrounding assisted reproduction. Dr Kelly, thank you for your time. Why is this such a significant case?
Well, I think as Talia said, it raises some issues that for a long time have been unresolved around the legal status of sperm donors, but particularly sperm donors who play a role in the child's life.
What sort of precedent does this set for future cases? Would people who conceive their children through sperm donations have reason to be concerned that there will be now a change in those roles?
Yeah, I think so. And with all due respect to Talia, I'd say that the decision actually creates significant uncertainty. So while the family at the centre of this dispute have certainty, a lot of other people who have known donors, so women, but also the donors themselves, what the decision leaves us with is the question of how involved a donor needs to be transformed from a sperm donor to a parent. And unfortunately, the High Court offers us no guidance on that. We don't know the level of involvement that's necessary. And in this particular case, this is the extreme end of the spectrum. I'd agree with Talia, this was very much a co-parenting arrangement. But we've got a lot of grey in between, from co-parenting through to basically uninvolved. And unfortunately, now the only way to determine in any given case whether an individual is simply a donor or is now a father is to ask the court.
That's an incredible level of uncertainty if that's the case. I mean, this was a time, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, this woman did conceive this child when she was single and his name is on the birth certificate. Is that correct?
That's correct. And that's key to the case, in the sense that while couples are well protected in the Family Law Act, in the sense that there are legal presumptions that a donor is not a legal parent, single women are not even mentioned in the Family Law Act, which is really how this case arose.
Yeah, and this was a case where Commonwealth and state laws clashed. That was at the heart of it, wasn't it?
It was. I mean, it's essentially has come down to a constitutional dispute. So we have now in every state in Australia legislation that creates an irrebuttable presumption that a sperm donor is not a legal parent. And in most states, it clarifies that applies in the case of a single woman. But now we have at the federal level, we have a high court decision which says the opposite. So while, as I said, this family have certainty, I think we actually, for a lot of other people, have a large degree of uncertainty.
And how will that be resolved?
Ideally, it would be resolved through legislation. So as I said, this particular family are at one end of the spectrum of known donor type cases. And in this case, I would say he was most definitely playing the role of a father, not a donor. And what we have in most cases, though, are families where there's no intention that the man be a parent to the child, and he himself does not have that intention. And so I think that the law really needs to state that presumptively a sperm or egg donor is not a legal parent, but then give people the option of opting out of that norm and creating what are often referred to as multiple parent laws. So the recognition of three or four legal parents, where that is in fact what all of the parties intended. And that's the approach that other jurisdictions have taken. For example, British Columbia and Ontario in Canada both allow multi-parent arrangements. And so you've got that certainty at birth for those children. And really that's what it comes down to, is children are entitled to know who their parents are from birth.
There shouldn't be much concern about or confusion about it, should there?
Exactly. And so I think what we've got now is a group of children who, unfortunately, their parentage is uncertain at birth if we don't think about how to address this legislatively.
How about in the case now? I mean, the laws have changed, of course, across jurisdictions, and, the donor's name is often not on birth certificates. Would that have an impact?
Look, it's extremely rare for a donor to be named on the birth certificate. And so, again, I kind of want to reinforce, as Talia did, I think that this was a specific case with a certain set of facts. In most cases, that wouldn't be done. And then that is a reflection of the intentions of the parties. So the birth certificate issue is a bit of a red herring in this case, in that it's just very unusual to see that in a known donor type arrangement, unless, as I've said, the intention from the outset is to co-parent.
Thank you so much for explaining it with such clarity. It's an absolute pleasure to speak to you. Dr. Fiona Kelly is a law professor at La Trobe University, and this is RN Drive.